Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Depending on where you are tuning in from, thank you. My name is Darcy Buckish, also known as Inspector Bark. I'm a licensed private investigator here in the state of Georgia. I own my own detective agency here in Georgia, and I'm also licensed in the state of Florida. My logo is Inspector Bark. If you haven't seen it, please go to my Inspector Bark Facebook page. It was cleverly done by my cousin, and I can't thank her enough. And what we do is we sniff out the best and the worst in canine care. So what we're going to be talking about today is a full 2 hours with my guest co-host, Scott Fine, who, if you haven't listened to the shows before, you will know that Scott Fine is the founder of Joey's Legacy. You can find Joey's Legacy on Facebook. And let me go right to it so you exactly know where to go. So it's Joey, spelled J-O-E-Y apostrophe S, Legacy, dash, Vet Male Victims, Veterinarian Malpractice Victims. This is becoming, unfortunately, more common than you want to believe. Scott Fine will be heading up most of the first hour of our show, ladies and gentlemen. We are proud to announce that our guest speaker for a full hour will be animal advocate attorney Christina Bergstrom. And what I'm going to do at this time is I'm going to read to you the email that I disseminate, and they are both in the queue right now. I see their numbers. Thank you, Christina. I know you're there. I know you're there, Scott. I'm going to read the email that I send out, and it's also posted on Joey's Legacy, the Facebook page, group page I just shared with all of you. And I send this to approximately 4,000 people, all blind carbon copy. And I always say, please feel free to share this email. Greetings. Strength in numbers. Knowledge is power. Come forward. You are not alone. If you suspect a rescue or shelter who is not putting the needs of the animals first and foremost, share your story with us. This episode, we have a very special guest, animal advocate attorney Christina Bergstrom. I encourage everybody to check out her website. It's www.theanimallawfirm.com. You can also find her on Facebook, The Animal Law Firm. Christina is licensed to practice law in the states of Colorado, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Christina is fighting for the underdog. Christina's law firm represents people and pets in pet custody, dog bite defense, service animal representation, veterinarian malpractice, breeder contract disputes, and so much more. Christina Bergstrom is also a lawyer on the panel for Joey's Legacy-Vet Male Victims. Tune in to hear what she is doing to help victims that have suffered a loss of their four-legged family member. We have the privilege of having Counsel Bergstrom on the show for a full hour. Scott Fine, primary administrator of the group Facebook page called Joey's Legacy-Vet Male Victims, you can find on Facebook, will be heading up the first hour of the podcast discussing with Christina how they work hand-in-hand together to fight for justice for four-legged family members that are no longer with us. Tune in to hear what is being done about seeking justice. Also coming on the show during the first hour will be Kelly Nicole. Kelly lost her beloved pet ferret, Yeti. Kelly will be sharing her story with us during this segment. Please click on her Facebook page to read Yeti's story. And that Facebook page is called Justice for Yeti-Virginia. So we air this for a full 2 hours. All episodes are recorded. If you wish to call into the show with any questions, comments, or thoughts, please do so by calling the number 563-999-3599. Sorry, we do not accept blocked phone calls. So at this moment, I am going to bring in Mr. Scott Fine, who is waiting patiently in the queue. And good morning, good afternoon, good evening to you, Mr. Scott Fine.
Hello, Darcy. How are you?
I am well. And just so our listeners know, there is like a 2 to 3 second delay. So let's be a little bit aware of that, because if Scott's talking to Christina, I might interject. There will be a little bit of an overflow, so to speak. So, Scott, we have a full hour, actually 2 hours, dedicated to your victims having Counsel Bergstrand on the show. I'm excited about. I love the fact she's licensed in 3 states, going to be licensed in 2 more. Scott, why don't we first start off, if we may, tell us a little bit about Joey's legacy and how it became what it is today.
Well, Joey's legacy started in October of 2017, after the death of our dachshund in June of 2017 as a result of breaching the standard of care by a substitute veterinarian that attended to Joey on the day he was brought in. Unfortunately, the veterinarian chose not to perform laboratory tests, which would have revealed Joey's problem at that time, which was he was in early stage renal failure. Joey was brought in for general GI distress, some vomiting and other GI symptoms. And the vet chose to inject Joey with a drug called Convenia, which for renal patients is contraindicated. 2 days later, we had to euthanize Joey. His kidneys were effectively destroyed, and that's how Joey's legacy got started. We sought a couple of independent veterinarians to provide reviews for us, which they did, and both agreed that there were a number of other renal-friendly drugs that Joey could have been given, which more than likely would have allowed him to survive that veterinary experience. So anyway, we proceeded with legal action, and we ended up being successful. And the independent veterinarian reviews gave me the idea to start our organization and to see if there were others out there that experienced similar outcomes with their companion animals. And it didn't take more than 2 or 3 months before we had several hundred members of our Facebook group. It's been over 6 years now, or up, almost 6 years, and we're up to about 4,300 members. Of course, not all are victims of veterinary negligence, but unfortunately, too many are. Ironically, I'll give you a little backstory with Christina. The first time we had a conversation, I'm not sure if she remembers, but anyway, I definitely do, and I always will. It was the day that I left work early and was headed to the vet clinic, because our regular vet told us that it was time to let Joey go. Suffering was too much. So I remember driving there, and I think Christina had called during that drive to the vet. So I was distracted for a little bit, from what I knew I had to do, which was horrific. But anyway, that's how Christina and I got started. She agreed to, try to help us with cases. And that's how it took off from there. So anyway, hi, wow. Christina.
Well, let me bring her on. Okay, she's still in the queue. So, Scott, I'm going to give you the honors of introducing this wonderful woman that is now on the show. Welcome, Christina Bergstrand. Okay. It's a pleasure to have you on the Inspector Bark podcast with Scott Fine.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here, and I appreciate what both of you do. Yeah. This is amazing.
Thank
and,
you.
And we appreciate
we do it for the animals, and we appreciate you.
Yeah.
Scott, why don't you go ahead, you'll be the lead on this, and I'll interject. I will be muting myself. just because I have a little tickle in my throat. I'm getting a cough, so I'm going to be muting myself, and I'm going to jump in. But, Scott, you go ahead, and please give the honors of introducing this wonderful animal advocate attorney who is fighting for the underdog.
So this is Christina Barchton. Been a pleasure to know her for 6 years. She was the one, she was the first attorney to agree to try to help us with our mission. When so many told us before we even started Joey's Legacy that we were wasting our time because no attorney would be interested in these types of cases for a number of reasons, and no veterinarians would be willing to call out other veterinarians for their negligence and malpractice. Well, to all those naysayers, look at me now, or look at us now, I should say. We work with over 40 attorneys throughout the United States. We have a team of 10 veterinarians, five are U.S. veterinarians and five are overseas veterinarians. And I think that's a good segue into the first subject, Christina. Next month, September, will be 1 year since we brought on our overseas vets. And before I did that, I wanted to poll a few of our attorneys, and of course, Christina was one of them, to see what they thought about the likelihood that the American justice system would accept opinion letters from veterinarians in not in the U.S. And as I recall, Christina was pretty amenable to the idea. And I would say after 11 months, it's worked out fairly well. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the overseas vets definitely provide a level of thoroughness that the American vets are great. Like, all these vets are great, don't get me wrong. But it seems that there's a little bit more thoroughness from the overseas vets compared to some of the American vets.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. You know, I think the work ethic is stronger. And, you know, I should mention to the audience that many of these overseas vets attended veterinary colleges that are AVMA accredited, and accredited being regarded as providing the highest standard of achievement for veterinary medical education. So essentially, they're getting the same curriculum in their vet schools as our U.S. vet students do here. Many of these vets have also authored and co-authored research papers that are used here in the U.S. and throughout the world. Our team of vets can provide opinion letters, also known as certificates of merit, regarding dogs, cats, the equine family, horses, donkeys, goats, and other farm animals. They also can opine on avian medicine, as well as exotics, such as ferrets and guinea pigs. And we're going to have a guest in a little while that's going to tell you a story of her story of veterinary malpractice. So, Christina, one of the situations that I've come across, and I know you must have, is the acceptance of letters from overseas vets in either out-of-court settlements or during litigation, be it small claims or civil court. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of, generally speaking, I don't submit any veterinarian's letter to the court. Normally, this stuff is just given in discovery if there's an active civil case going on, so it gets disclosed or shared to the opposing counsel. And then, so, I mean, in terms of acceptance or in cases where I'm negotiating with an insurance company, I send it to the insurance company. And, I mean, in terms of their acceptance of it, it's it's not so much that it's not accepted by those people. It's just that what I find is the greatest obstacle to using overseas vets is the cost. Because to have someone come fly from the Ukraine or England or wherever some of these vets are living, you know, it's pretty expensive. And so depositions can be done virtually, but expert testimony in a trial, it's very, very rare that it will be permitted to be done virtually. There has to be exceptional extenuating circumstances, and the vet's location is typically not one of those.
So a vet can live in Europe or anywhere else. And what about the fact, isn't there a law somewhere that says that an expert witness can't be subpoenaed if they're out of the country or some distance away?
I know it's not a law that says that they can't be subpoenaed. It's that you can't subpoena a vet. Like, you can't subpoena an expert witness who lives outside of the jurisdiction where this case is happening. You can't subpoena them and force them to come to the jurisdiction. So, like, this applies even in the United States. So let's say I'm in a veterinary malpractice lawsuit in Pennsylvania, and my expert is in Colorado. That's where my expert lives. So the other side cannot issue a subpoena to me or to my expert and force my expert to travel from Colorado and do the deposition in Pennsylvania. What has to happen is that the opposing counsel, the opposing party, would have to, they can issue a subpoena, but they have to issue the subpoena for the expert to testify where the expert lives. So, I mean, I'm not really sure how it would work with international law. I would imagine functionally it would be the same, you know, because the case is in the United States, so the United States rules would apply. So my guess would be that if the veterinarian that's being sued, if the defendant wanted to subpoena one of our expert vets that live in Europe, they would issue the subpoena, pick the day and time, but the place would have to be where the expert lives in Europe.
Okay.
Sky, one second. I'm wondering, could they be brought in as an expert witness via Zoom, via satellite, something like that, Christina? In another country.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can file a motion typically and ask the court, but a lot of states, so in the three states that I practice in, there's rules of civil procedure that specifically address remote testimony. Most of them are still haven't been updated from phone testimony, but they're getting there. But either way, remote testimony, there's a lot of rules about remote testimony, especially when it comes to expert witnesses. Generally speaking, even after COVID, well, before COVID, the preference was, like, unless your expert is, like, on his or her deathbed, then no, there's no remote testimony for an expert, because the things that they're testifying to are typically so complicated that they want the expert there in person. I don't really know why. That's just what the rule says. Like, it basically says that. Like, the more complicated the expert's testimony, the more it requires them to be there in person. Since COVID, things haven't really changed. And so the standards are still the same. When it comes to, like, lay witnesses, non-expert witnesses, the court's a little bit more relaxed. But generally speaking, I mean, experts almost always have to testify in person.
Okay. Scott, before you jump on to the next question, because I'm looking at the email we had our conference call together with Christina, I want to backtrack a little bit, if I may, Christina, and I want to ask you, I love the fact that you are licensed in three states. I mentioned them earlier, Colorado, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, in New Jersey. And I believe, I remember you're going to be getting licensed in New York, and the other state I remember, because I see it, is Texas. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. I'm working on it. It's in process.
Oh, well, we need you in every state. And I know you work nicely with Jeremy Cohen, who's Boston Dog Lawyers. People, if you don't know that Facebook page, please go to it as well. He is another animal advocate attorney like Christina, and I know they do bounce off each other cases and all that. Christina, I want to know what made you go into this field of law.
Yeah, that's a great question. I get asked it all the time, and I really, you know, should sort of really amazing story to tell people. It's an entertaining story. Because it's not super entertaining. I was working for a family law firm when I first started, and so I was doing divorces, child custody, things like that. That was the one area of law I promised myself while I was in law school that I would not work in. But when I graduated law school, the economy still hadn't recovered from the Great Recession, so beggars can't be choosers. So I ended up working for a family law firm, but my bosses were really nice, and so they asked me one day, they said, hey, we know family law is tough. Is there anything else you'd like to do? And I said, how about animal law and environmental law? And they said, what's animal law? And I said, I don't know, but let's try it. And they said, okay. So we put it on the website, and, you know, before you knew it, we had, we were getting phone calls almost immediately, people stealing their neighbor's dogs, their family's dogs. My first case was actually a pet custody case, kind of a different flavor of pet custody. It was getting a pug named Anastasia back from a neighbor who stole my client's dog. So that was my very first animal law case.
Let me jump in on that before, because I'm looking at your Facebook page again, everybody. The Facebook page is called The Animal Law Firm. It's a beautiful picture of Christina and a beautiful dog. In the back, there's mountains. It looks like something from The Sound of Music, you know, that movie from years ago. It's just absolutely breathtaking. But I do want to talk about what you've got posted, and I'm sure your assistant has helped you with your social media platforms. We're gonna talk about Zeon here in a minute. But let me explain to you what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing, and I'm seeing it in my local area here in Forsyth County, Georgia. I was on, I got notified last week. I was with a girlfriend. We were heading out for a little fun shopping and lunch, and I got a text message. A call came through. Didn't answer it. Didn't recognize the number, but the person texted me. This gal lives in my county, and her dog got out. We had a terrible storm a couple weeks ago, and their fence fell down. So their beautiful pit bull, Haley, I think her name was, Haley, H-A-I-L-E-Y, got loose, but she was coming back home. They were trying to secure the fence. Long story short, just last week, a white, like a painter's van, pulled up. They grabbed the dog. They removed her air tag. So I said, well, what's an air tag? Because I called her at the end of the day, the young gal. She was 19 years old. She's had the dog since she's 10 years old. She was heading back to college, mm-hmm. 2 hours away. The next day, her dad was trying to help, and I said what I did say when I got the text. I stopped what I was doing with my girlfriend, and I said, immediately get signs out. Post a reward. To this day, I don't believe they found this dog. They threw her leash in the bushes, and they took off her air tag so they couldn't track her, okay? What we're seeing, Christina, and I don't know if you're hearing this as well, but what people are doing, are they are purposely stealing dogs, even have the nerve to open up a fence. This is why people should have cameras, surveillance cameras around their house. Ring is a great one. And they are stealing the dog, holding the dog for basically ransom, waiting for the reward, and then they get dressed up or have somebody look presentable and come back and go, I found your dog. So most people are not aware of this scam, which is what it is, or worst case scenario, we don't want to think it. I mean, they're stealing these dogs to use them as baits, have you. But keep in mind, that is something that we are seeing on an uptake, and it's very sad, and it makes me mad that these people do this to family-loving pets. It's wrong. Are you hearing anything like that, Christina?
No, I'm not. I haven't encountered that. Typically, people who come to me, they know who has their dog. So thankfully, it's relatively straightforward to get the dog back. I really, really hope that young woman finds her dog. I really hope that they're just holding out for the reward and not using that dog as a bait dog. That was my first thought when you started to tell this story. I really hope
mm-hmm.
that dog's okay.
Mm-hmm. Scott,
so
do you mind if we have Christina talk about Zion, because Zion is there's a rally taking place tomorrow in Parker, Colorado. Do you mind, Scott?
Yeah.
And then we'll go back to those other subject matters, because we do want to make sure Kelly Nicole has time to share her story. I did speak to Kelly for about 15, 20 minutes on Sunday, and I am aware of the time, Christina, because I know you have to be off by a certain time. So let's change gears a little bit and share with our listeners, if you will, Christina, about Zion. He's a beautiful dog.
He is. He's a cute little guy, and he's trapped in a really bad system. So his name's Zion, and he is a young dog. This is in Parker, Colorado. So right now he has been held in solitary confinement in a shelter since November of 2022. And the reason he's been held in solitary confinement is because of really just a bad judge and a prosecutor with an ego problem. Zion is being held as the bond for his appeal. So this case, and like if you go to our Facebook page, Zion has a website now too. I forget the website exactly, but if you go to our Facebook page, you can find Zion's story, you can find his website link, and you can find a video where I explain all of this. And to try to make it short, like my client, Danelle, she pled guilty to owning a dangerous dog. And then when the sentence was issued, the judge ordered her to relinquish the dog to the shelter. And she said, hey, wait a minute. No, I'm going to get an attorney. So then she hires us. Unfortunately, and this is a lesson that I tell people, is that hire an attorney as soon as you get charged. The attorney cannot do anything after you've pled guilty. Like, we are stuck with your guilty plea. There's nothing we can do to get it thrown out. There's nothing, I mean, like, unless we can prove that you were drunk or high on drugs or, like, you had part of your brain removed on the day that you entered that guilty plea, like, there's really nothing any attorney can do to get rid of that guilty plea. Like, we are stuck with it. And therefore, we are stuck with the consequences of that guilty plea. So what happened was Zion had gotten into two scuffles, dog-on-dog scuffles. They were within a couple weeks of each other. The first one was so minor. So, like, because they were, like, around the same time, they kind of got treated as one incident. And so one of the scuffles got dismissed, and the second one, Danelle pled guilty to what's called a deferred judgment sentence in Colorado. And basically, it's kind of like a deferred prosecution, sort of. But basically, it means what it says, that you enter a guilty plea, and at the end of a certain probationary period, as long as you don't violate the law, then that guilty plea goes away as if it never happened, right? It basically gets expunged. There's no such thing as expungements anymore. It's you get your record sealed nowadays, but that's a separate soapbox issue for another podcast. anyway, so he pled guilty to this deferred judgment sentence, and then right before the expiration of this deferred judgment sentence, her husband went outside with Zion. It was raining, or the pavement was slick. The prosecutor took huge issue with us saying that it was raining on the day. Like, she is just absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, the pavement was wet. He slipped and fell, dropped the leash. Zion got into another scuffle with another dog. Again, none of these incidents involved puncture wounds, fight. Like, no blood was drawn, like, maybe some fur flew, but that's it, the guy, the other dog owner, he wasn't going to press charges until the animal control officer said, oh, well, this isn't Zion's first offense. So he's like, okay, well, then I'm going to press charges. And that's another cautionary tale. Like, if your dog isn't hurt, like, what's the point of pressing charges? Like, what are you accomplishing by that? You know what I mean? People think that they're, like, doing the right thing. Like, oh, well, this dog is hot. You don't know the circumstances of the prior incident. And these animal control officers do not have any interest in giving you the full story, because one more guilty plea that they get is another, you know, set of fines that the town gets. Like, you know, they're just looking for notches on their belt. They're not looking for justice. So anyway, so he decides to press charges. Danielle is like, well, you know, nothing bad happened the first time, so I'm just going to plead guilty this time too. And then when she goes in for sentencing, the judge wants her to relinquish her dog. I have a feeling that there was probably some foul play by the prosecutor and that she didn't tell Danielle the consequences of her guilty plea. I feel like Danielle wouldn't have entered into it if she had known that her dog being relinquished was a possible consequence. So anyway, so she hires us. We go in to argue sentencing. The judge is pretty set on relinquishing the dog. We're telling him he doesn't have authority to do that. We're telling him that these incidents aren't that severe. Like, he's wrong. Just let her have her dog back. She's done all this stuff to, like, make sure that this doesn't happen again. So on top of it, too, Zion's dad, so Danielle's husband, right, he dies after this incident, but before sentencing, unrelated to this case. He got a traumatic brain injury when he fell, because anytime you fall, you get a traumatic brain injury. Like, anytime you hit your head, it's always classified as a TBI by medical professionals, because you're not really supposed to be hitting your head on stuff. So he was fine. Like, the traumatic brain injury wasn't traumatic by, you know, normal people's standards. He was fine. He recovered. He died from an unrelated heart issues. My associate was handling this case, and she shared this information with the prosecutor, and the prosecutor used it against my client during her sentencing argument. She goes, Judge, you can't trust Danielle because she didn't tell you that her husband died. I'm not saying that Zion caused his death, but I'm not saying that he didn't. It was basically what she argued. So she's like, you can't trust her, so you need to impound Zion, right? And so basically the judge says, I'm going to agree with this prosecutor and her insane argument. I don't trust Danielle, and I'm going to impound Zion. And so my associate very intelligently and quickly says, well, we're filing an appeal and we're asking the court to stay the impoundment. And the judge says, okay, yeah, I'll grant your stay, but I'm going to make Zion act as the bond. So he's going to get impounded anyway. And so normally when you appeal a case, you pay money. And the money sits in the court, and the court holds on to it. And then once the appeal is over, depending on the results, you either get your money back or the money goes to the other party. And so Zion is a living, breathing, thinking, feeling creature who has been locked up in solitary confinement in this crap shelter, not getting any human contact, not playing with other dogs. He's just sitting in there, being surrounded by crazy barking dogs and people that are treating him like a hardened criminal. There's no behaviorist. They won't give us any information on his health. All they've given us so far is a bill for an ear infection that he got while he was there. But they didn't give us the records or anything. Like, they're refusing to give us the records on him. They're going so far as to not only opposing the request for records, but also demanding a gag order so we can't go to the press about how Zion's being treated. I mean, it is just, the town prosecutor has accused me of harassment and says that if I contact her again about this case, they'll consider it harassment. I'm like, I am beyond words with this case. I just do not understand. So It's just unbelievable. And so this dog is suffering. Oh, and by the way, my client has been paying this whole time for the dog to be sheltered there, because on top of like her dog being taken from her, she has to pay for her dog to sit in this shelter with these people who don't care about him while she lives in Oregon. Because she moved to Oregon, right? Her husband died. She didn't have any ties to Colorado. She needed to get away. She was grieving. She was going to take Zion with her. And they're like, nope. Nope, he needs to sit here. He needs to be relinquished and given away. Well, there's absolutely no way that the Denver Dumb Friends League is going to adopt this dog out to anyone. He's been sitting, he has a quote-unquote three-bite history, and he's been sitting in solitary confinement since November. There is no way that it is possible for him to be adopted out to someone else without significant rehabilitation. And my client's willing to do that. She was doing that. Her trainer who lives in Colorado is even willing to take the dog. And they're like, nope, F you. F you with a big, fat, double middle finger, kissing, crossing. Like,
wow.
They are just unbelievable. So,
I'm on your Facebook page right now. I'm on your Facebook page right now. And basically what I'd like to address is the fact that you have somebody that posted a Jerry Chase, okay? Jerry Chase, and he posted his letter to the public officials of Parker, Colorado. Now, I'm trying to get scrolling down there, but it just froze up on me. I really feel that hopefully you're really marketing this or your team's marketing this, because 2 days ago, if people scroll down, you'll see the same picture as Zion, folks, but look at the one 2 days ago where it says, please join us at Zion's Freedom Rally on Thursday, August 17th, which is tomorrow at 3 p.m. Colorado time, at the town of Parker Municipal Building in Parker, Colorado. The animal law firm will continue to fight for Zion's freedom. Are you able or are you comfortable with telling us what shelter this is?
The Buddy Center in Castle Rock, Colorado. They're a subsidiary. Yeah, the Buddy Center in Castle Rock, Colorado. They're a subsidiary of the Denver Dumb Friends League, or they're a satellite location of the Denver Dumb Friends League.
Okay, and you're saying
there's
Buddy.
A lot of B as in Bravo,
like
Y. Yeah, like, hey, buddy, how's it going?
Okay. I'm sorry, Scott. What were you going to say to Christina?
Christina, why are you such animus toward this dog? I mean, he didn't break any skin. He didn't call. I mean, what's the deal?
Sorry, I was having some trouble with my phone there. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I really think this is just, unfortunately, in the legal profession, believe it or not, there's a lot of really terrible personalities. I'm sure that comes to a shock, as a shock to most of you.
No shock.
No shock here.
Yeah.
I mean, no shock here.
No.
Nope.
I find a lot
no
of attorneys
shock.
To be absolutely just unbelievably difficult to talk to. I don't have any attorney friends because I generally cannot stand attorneys. But anyway, that aside, I mean, I really think this is just a personality issue. I really think it's just a personality issue. I think the prosecutor, her name's Ruth Ann Goff. I forget the name of her law firm, but I mean, her whole law firm is like this. Like they're usually like civil attorneys who get some cushy government contract to go and be a part-time prosecutor for some little town. And then they just get paid tons of money to railroad unrepresented parties who are scared and, you know, this is their first criminal offense, and they have to go into the municipal court and, you know, fight. And they usually don't. They just plead guilty, pay the fine, and move on. You know, she's a young attorney, and for some reason she has, like, taken it upon herself to just, like, make this, like, the case that, I guess, propels her into partnership or something. I don't know what exactly her problem is. Because at one point she was willing to let the dog go home. She said she needed to check some requirements with the Oregon jurisdiction where my client lives. And finally, she was taking so long. I was like, do you want me to do it? Like, what are you looking for? Like, they probably don't care, which I find most jurisdictions don't care when, like, you bring a dog. Like, they don't they don't care. They just don't care. I mean, I've had people take dogs to Arizona and they're like, we don't even keep track of dog bites. Like, what are you talking about? So, I'm sure that's what it was. And then while she was screwing around, wasting time, letting this dog languish, because this was in like February, March of this year. One of the idiots at the buddy center, one of their stupid volunteers, left his cage door open and he got out and got into a scuffle with another dog. And she's like, Zion attacked another dog and there was blood she made it sound like carnage. She's like, Zion broke out of his cage and attacked another dog. And I don't know the severity, but emailing us, like Cujo got loose. And so we're like, well, then give us the records of the incident. And it just said like, oh, yeah, somebody left his door open and he got out and he got into a scuffle and we were able to break it up within like seconds. And it was like absolutely a non-issue. And she's like, he can't be released. I can't in good conscience let him go to another jurisdiction that has absolutely no bearing or care about me or anything that I do. And that's why she's saying, like, I guess that's why she's saying she can't. And so I called her out for being an absolute, can I swear on this show?
Yes, of course, but no F-bombs.
Yeah.
You can swear, but
okay,
no F-bombs.
Fair enough, yeah. No, I called her out for being an absolute asshole, and then ever since then, she's just been, like, she's just dug her heels deeper. And then I tried reaching out to her bosses, and, like, they wouldn't respond, so I reached out again and, like, emailed the whole entire law firm, and they're like, Ruthie is doing a good job, and Ruthie, I'm like, do you want to know what her nickname is in our office? But anyway, they've just dug their heels in. So then I tried to reach out to the Denver Dumb Friends League directly, and they get their attorney who has a major stick up her ass. If you just look at her picture, I looked at her picture and I was like, I can tell she's going to be an absolute bitch. She was. And so anyway, like, yeah, so I,
and what
try,
is her
I
name
sent
again?
A subpoena
Ruth,
to,
what's her first name? What's her first name again?
Ruthann Goff, G-O-F-F. She is the prosecutor for the town. She's a baby attorney. I don't think she has a picture on the website. It's the attorney for the Denver Dumb Friends League has just really taken it upon herself to just fight this tooth and nail for absolutely no reason,
it sounds
as far
to
as
me,
I can tell.
And it sounds to me, as a woman, and, you know, women are very catty, women are very insecure, I think, could it be possible that they have a personal vendetta against you, and they could care less about the dog, naturally, they could care less. So they're doing this as a vengeance against you, possibly.
Oh, for 110%. Like, that's exactly what this is. That's why I was saying that this is a personality issue. I'm not the gentlest dove, that's for sure. I've been told multiple times I'm very terse. But it's just like, it's because I don't have time to screw around with, like, back and forth and posturing. It's like, let's just cut to the chase. This is what I want. What are you willing to do? You're not willing to do that? Fine, we'll go to court. But it's just like, you're representing an organization whose tagline is compassion always. I'm like, where's the compassion for this dog? Like, I get it. You don't like me. I don't like you either, but that doesn't have anything to do with doing what's right for the dog. Like, if you are representing an organization that actually cares about animals, why is this one different? Because I hurt your feelings? Grow up. I don't care about your feelings. You don't care about my feelings. Like, like, what makes you think that, like, you digging in and being nastier isn't something that I am going to use against you in the public eye? Like, you know, I'm just, like, shocked by their behavior. It's honestly just appalling.
So, Christina, what do you see as the best case outcome if you're successful tomorrow?
Honestly, I don't think we're going to... best case scenario, they let the dog go to Oregon and be with his mom. That's the best case scenario, that the town actually realizes that what they're doing is super, super wrong. People keep forwarding me emails from the mayor, and it's copy and pasted. It's copy and, dear so-and-so, copy and pasted response saying, I'm helpless. I can't do anything. I can't get involved. Yeah, you absolutely can. You're the mayor of the town. You can get involved. You can go and tell the judge. You're his boss.
Of course.
To let the fucking dog
out.
People, sorry.
People are generally lazy. They're lazy. Now, my dogs are going to bark because FedEx just pulled up, and they're dropping off a Chewy package. But my Ricky's sitting at the door looking. Let me just tell you, we've got a couple people in the queue. I do recognize Kelly's number. Kelly is in the queue. This is a fascinating case. And you know what might happen, Scott? We might have to have Christina come back another day so we could finish what we had originally or what you had originally outlined. Is that okay with you, Christina and Scott?
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
because
fine with me.
I've got, okay, I see who's calling. Before I put Kelly on, and I'm looking at the time, I'm very conscious of that, Christina. One thing
yeah.
I do like about you, I do like the fact that you are a tough gal. And let me just tell her, yes, hold on. I know the other number. What I do is when I know my guests are calling, I list their numbers. So I did not list this person, but she is in Colorado and she wants to say something. She shared our podcast. Yes, she's great. And 1 second, Lynn, I see you. So here's the story. And Kelly, you're going to be on next. I love the fact you have to have, I always say, a backbone made of titanium. You have to have broad shoulders, and you have to have a big mouth to blow that whistle. And we have to be the voice for these animals. I speak to whistleblowers all over the country. Scott knows this. And I deal with mainly investigating and researching rogue rescues. Yes, there are some good ones out there. But in my studies, in my research, I find 80% of them are bad. And we're seeing more and more shelters following suit. I wish I had more time. I'll discuss it after you leave the show at 10 after 1 because it is disturbing what we're seeing, and I'll share that. But what I'd like to do is thank you for being the voice for the animals. And sometimes there are repercussions and retaliation that takes place, but you have to do the proper thing. Yes, expose them on social media. Do that. But you have to file complaints on a local level, a state level, a federal level. And that is why I became a private investigator, because it gives me a little bit more opportunity to open that door a little wider. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, let me go ahead and bring in Lynn Gerber. Lynn, you are on the show with Inspector Bark and Christina Bergstrom. Scott Fine. Go ahead.
Thank you, Christina, for what you're doing. It's amazing. So I think what we all need to understand is DDFL and is the most powerful agency in the nation, one of them, and in Colorado. And the CEO happens to be the highest paid and, again, the most powerful. And what they say generally rules, even in the sheltering world that they work within. So my thoughts are I did work with April Steele, the CEO, for 5 years. I've worked on as a registered lobbyist with the state of Colorado. I have a platform of about 40,000 followers on Good Dog, Good Life. I've learned to keep my emotions out of things, but to be passionate. And I believe if we rally and we get the right information, because this is not about the dog, this is political, and however that looks, I have no problem posting this on my Good Dog, Good Life, communicating with No Kill Colorado. And even though I don't align with them on many issues, they are very good about getting the word out when a dog's suffering. I just finished a year and a half working on standards of care with April being the lead on, you know, humane treatment. And truly, they are warehousing this dog. And it troubles me that I didn't know anything about this till a week ago and somebody sent it to me. And April Steele, the CFO of Denver Dumfriends League, is the leader in the new SB 1160 standards of care, not holding dogs in inhumane conditions like this dog is being held. And I think that's an important thing that takes the mark off of everybody scuffling. The bottom line is there isn't two other attorneys that are citing that law. It was just signed into law by Jared Polis in May. And I think we rally and get Marlon Reese on board, and we rally about, are we truly following our new law with the largest organization holding a dog? So, I mean, you fight fire with fire and facts. So I am willing to help Christina or anyone to at least get this out there and push this out there. I see very little on social media about it.
I would, the animal law firm. Go on to her Facebook page. There's post after post about the rally for tomorrow.
And I just posted two things. I posted two things, but I'm not getting any play because it's really not clear what's happening. So if I don't know legally and I don't know how this can be pushed out there, but if Christina, there is something about you saying something. So if somebody could put something informally together or the owner or something that's a plea for help, I will put it immediately on Good Dog, Good Life. And I've already called No Kill Colorado, I think, and Max Fund. I think both of those individuals rally to help dogs. I don't know all the circumstances behind the dog, but I think that you can get a lot of people that will push it out there. Sean Boyd with Channel 4 always does investigative reports on dogs. She is probably the best journalist and a nationally renowned journalist on getting anything out like this. So I'm not sure legally where that stands as far as getting it out.
But Lynn, let me just cut you off because we're limited on time, okay? And while I, Christina, with your permission, have you get in touch or Lynn get in touch with you after the show, and I know you have another commitment at the 1:15 hour, can I give Lynn Gerber your contact information?
I have her contact information. She has mine. You can give her mine, and if somebody wants to talk, I'll talk. If not, I'll just lay low.
Well, I think you have a lot of connections, Lynn. I mean, you've been on the show before. You've done a lot with pets in Colorado.
I'm not going to push anything that people don't want to help on.
No, okay. I understand. Christina, you don't have to answer that. I mean, I will. I just think you're doing wonderful work, Lynn, in what you're doing and calling into the show and helping to spread the word about Zeon. But it's sad. I think it is politics. On that note, Lynn, if you want to stay on, you can mute yourself. I've got to bring in Kelly because I'm looking at the time. Kelly Nicole is the owner of Yeti. So let me bring her in right now. If you guys can all, maybe if you need to get yourself a glass of water or something, just mute yourself, okay? And I'm going to bring Kelly in and guide her. So
okay.
Let's go ahead and bring her in, and thank you. Welcome, Kelly Nicole. Thank you for your patience. You're on the Inspector Bark podcast show.
Hi, how are you, Darcy?
I am well. I just want to give a little background because I did want to speak to you, and we did speak for the first time on Sunday. I think it was about 15 or 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and you told me a lot about Yeti. I do want to let you know we have till 1:10 before Christina has to get off the call, but I want to share your story. I promised and committed to you, and I always keep my promise. So, Kelly, I'm going to give you the platform. And, Christina, if you have any questions while she's speaking, just, jump right in, okay? Okay, Kelly, go ahead and talk about your pet ferret, Yeti.
Okay. So I'll try to make it as brief as possible. November the 9th, 21, I took Yeti in for a sudden illness to my normal veterinary clinic, Midway Veterinary Hospital, located in Chesapeake, and Dr. Stiles and Dr. Patos were both my regular veterinarians. I had been going to that clinic for about 12 years, 13 years. They've seen all of my animals, so I didn't have any type of doubts or anything as far as the care that they were receiving. And so I had taken Yeti in. probably about 8:50 in the morning. Dr. Bateau said she would have to have a surgical procedure done for a foreign body obstruction. Sometimes ferrets get into things they're not supposed to, swallow things, and an obstruction happens. So needless to say, Yeti went in for surgery, came out of surgery, and I got a phone call afterwards to pick her up at 4:50 for discharge. So I showed up with my five-year-old daughter at the time. We picked up Yeti. And when we were picking her up, I noticed that she was unconscious, and she had an IV catheter still inserted in her arm. I expressed verbally to the vet tech, and I had not seen Dr. Stiles, the one that actually performed the procedure. I didn't see her before. I didn't see her after. I only talked to her briefly for about 4 minutes. Post-operatively when she told me to pick her up. So needless to say, I picked her up, noticed that she was unconscious. I verbally stated my concerns to the vet tech. The vet tech then assured me she was fine, still a little sleepy from anesthesia, do the toe pull every 15 minutes until she wakes up. This is notated in his records. She died within the 13-minute travel from the vet's office to my house. I don't know if they – I'm not sure. She was either dead or dying when I received her at discharge. So the next morning I called. I didn't tell them that she was deceased, and I asked for records. Waited until I got the records, and then she asked me when I would come in to have Yeti's catheter taken out, and I told her there would be no need, that she was deceased. So needless to say, it took me about 3 hours. It took me about 3 hours.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, yes, it's awful. It's awful. So, and the worst part is she was in the back seat with my five-year-old, and my five-year-old is actually one that noticed that she was not well. Said she wasn't moving. Her eyes were completely dried out. So, it was just a very traumatic experience, mainly because the entire day, on the day of the surgery, they painted this picture that Yeti did great during surgery. There were no complications. Everything was smooth sailing. So the next day when I had gotten the records, I noticed that she was critically hypothermic. Ferrets, when they're, you know, when anyone or any person or animal, baby, it doesn't matter. When you undergo anesthesia, hypothermia is a risk that can happen. And when you are hypothermic, your body can't metabolize anesthesia properly to recover faster. Needless to say, she did not receive any type of heating therapy, IV therapy. Her monitoring was minimal. I think 3 temperature readings in a matter of 4 hours post-operatively before discharge. So I found all this out through the records, in that she was given an ASA score of 4, which is life-threatening systematic debilitating disease, shock, uremia, toxemia, sepsis, and things like that. None of this was told to me at all. And then I find out that she did a completely different procedure than the one that we discussed about her having initially.
Wow.
So she ultimately died as a result of this poor monitoring and procedure. And it's just and now we're fighting it legally. So, unfortunately, I haven't had the best at finding an attorney, to say the least. I've called quite a few of them. But I know I kind of figured and accepted that after the first 100 that I called, that I would most likely have to do this myself. So I started to read the Virginia laws and go over veterinary small exotic critical medicine books and things like that, and started educating myself about my case, because I knew that I had something. I just had to do it right. I had to figure out a way to hold them accountable for what they did.
Can I interject here? This is Darcy. First of all, I am so impressed and so proud of you to think about obtaining those medical records before you told them that, in my opinion, they killed Yeti.
Mm-hmm.
Again, folks, Justice for Yeti dash Virginia. So this is in the state of Virginia. I am so, I mean, you really were very astute to think that, because Scott knows that these people will forge medical records, these imposters within the animal welfare community. So, Kelly, for that, I'm very proud of you. Christina, I'm looking at the time. I know we have 10 minutes. Is there anything you want to say to Kelly before you have to get off the air?
No, I mean, well, a few thoughts. It sounds, I mean, yeah, it sounds like you're doing everything you can, Kelly, and you took all the right steps in the right order. And I'm assuming you got a letter from one of Joey's Legacy's vets.
Yes, actually I did. And I wanted to touch base because I was listening in when you guys were talking about, like, the validity of overseas veterinarians. And I have to say, so I found Joey's Legacy just because of the malpractice. I didn't know which direction I was going in. I was lost after this happened. I couldn't even believe it. So needless to say, I came across Scott and Joey's Legacy, and he helped me tremendously. And so I obtained two veterinary opinions. One of them is U.S. and one of them is overseas. And both of them do not know about each other. And both of them are consistent with each other and very detailed. And they're superb, awesome opinion letters.
Yeah, Joey's Legacy vets are a saving grace. Like, I and any other attorney in the state would not be able to proceed in the case without having Joey's Legacy vets. So when getting them is always the first step if you find yourself a victim of malpractice.
God, my head is blowing up right now.
I guess that's good and bad, right?
Thank you both.
So Kelly, I guess another thought I have that may or may not interest you, and maybe we can talk more at another time after the show, but I mean, I am not admitted to practice law in New Jersey, so I cannot, like, be a consultant for you directly, because that would be the unauthorized practice of law. But if you have an attorney who is licensed in Virginia, and that attorney is willing to work with me and use me as a consultant, then I can be admitted what's called pro hoc vitae, and then my license is protected, and your attorney can get the benefit of, like, my knowledge and experience. So, I mean, I put that out there for you, for anybody else who has a vet mal case that's in another state. If you have a local attorney, talk to your attorney, see if they want to use me as a consultant on the case, and see if there's anything that I can add or help with. Because as long as you have a local attorney, then that enables me to kind of practice in another state, so to speak.
Okay.
So
I didn't
Kelly,
know that was
you
possible.
Said that you,
so.
That's great. Kelly, you said you don't have an attorney currently in the state of Virginia?
I was referred through referral, and I've spoken. I've been kind of consistent with one attorney, which I'm going to make him my attorney at the end of all this, I promise. So I've been speaking with him on and off briefly, and he's been very interested in certain things. So I'm hoping that I can convince him to take my case. We'll see what happens.
Christina, do you know of any animal lawyers in the state of Virginia by chance?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. Scott honestly knows more animal attorneys around the country than I do.
Okay. This is actually a true story, and I shared this with Kelly. Years ago when I was still living in South Florida, Hollywood, Fort Lauderdale area, I was a pharmaceutical rep for Big Pharma for 17 and a half years. And I'll never forget this doctor's office. I remember exactly where it was. And this is going back years ago. And the nurse was Sally. Her name was Sally. Kelly, I don't remember if I told you if I remember the name when I talked to you.
Mm-hmm.
And Sally would tell me she had a pet ferret. And Kelly taught me something on Sunday, that ferrets like to be together, so that, you know, they want a companion. So I remember Sally telling me she had a pet ferret, and she would laugh because her veterinarian was Dr. Parrot. So the ferret would go and see the veterinarian, exotic animals, Dr. Parrot. That doctor was a female veterinarian that happened to live in my development outside of Fort Lauderdale called Cooper City, Florida, and I lived in a development called Embassy Lakes. She lived on one street and 10 houses down. I lived on the other, and she was a mom of three young girls and all that. I was telling Kelly that story, but how funny is you have, and of all doctors, you go to Dr. Parrot. The ferret goes to Dr.
It's
Parrot.
Match made in heaven.
Yes, exactly. With that, I do have five more minutes. We do have five more minutes with Christina. If anybody has a quick question, feel free to call in. The phone number is 563-999-3599. And, you know, you're more than welcome to stay on, Kelly, because we're going to dedicate the full 2 hours to Joey's victims, and if anybody wants to call in after Christina. Is there anything else, Kelly, you wanted to ask Christina before she has to get off the phone in 4 minutes?
No, I don't think so. I really appreciate her being on, and I've actually gathered quite a bit of information, so it's been helpful, to say the least. It's been super, super helpful to know where that somebody's rooting for the underdog here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she is.
Absolutely.
And she is. It says it on her website. It says it on the Facebook page. Please like each other's pages. Go over there right now. The Animal Law Firm. I showed you. There's a picture of Christina with the dog. Please give it a like. Good dog, good life. She does. Lynn is right. She has almost 40,000 followers over there. She is based right there in Boulder, Colorado, a true animal advocate. I like associating with true animal advocates, and there's a lot of them out there, and we need to find one another and support one another. Christina, on that note, you have 3 more minutes. What would you like to share with the group before you have to head to your next meeting?
Good question. I mean, there's a lot I could share. I mean, I think Kelly is a prime example of what to do, the right way to do things when you find yourself the victim of veterinary malpractice. Get those records. Don't tell them why you want the records. Stay cool, stay calm, stay collected when you're asking for the records. Just, you know, don't be upset. Don't yell and scream. Don't make threats, because as soon as you do that, then you open yourself up to, you know, records being changed, delays in getting your records. So just calmly ask for the records. Don't say why. And then, yeah, try to find an attorney in your – well, the second step is to call Joey's Legacy and send those records to one of Joey's vets, and then get in touch with an attorney once you have that letter, or letters, as they're doing now. If you find yourself in a pet custody dispute, you know, if you buy a pet with another – with a romantic partner, get a pup nup. We have them for sale as a template on our website. I can't emphasize that enough. I know it sounds crazy, but a pup nup will save you a lot of heartache later. Dog bite, if your dog's accused of biting another dog, do not give your dog up to animal control. You will end up in Zion's situation. And it's very hard to get the dog out without pleading guilty and paying a ton of money. And they really roll you over a barrel once you give your dog up. So don't give your dog up. If your dog's accused of biting, make them work for it. Take your dog to another state, to another undisclosed location. Don't give your dog up. That's all I can really say.
That is excellent advice. That is very good advice, because some of these animal control officers who are just there to collect a paycheck, they could care less about the animals, as we were hearing about this Castle Rock shelter. They're there just to, you know, get a paycheck. That is excellent advice, Christina. Wow, on that note, you've got 1 minute left, because I told you I hold true to what my guests say. If they are good for a certain time, I honor that. Christina, I would like to, I'm sure Scott as well, would like to have you back on another show in the near future. We'd love to have you again. You're a source of information, a wealth of information, and I'm sitting here like a sponge soaking it all up.
Well, yeah, no, I would love to come back anytime. Just let me know when you guys need me. Always happy to help.
Thank you, Christina. And Scott, why don't you say goodbye to your guest? It was a pleasure to have you on, Christina. Scott, go ahead and send her off because it is now 1:10.
Thanks, Christina. We'll talk soon, okay?
Sounds good, sir. Thank you both very much. Good luck, Kelly, and thanks to everyone listening in, and keep up all the good work for the animals.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
We're going to continue on with the show. Bye-bye. We're going to continue on with the show. We've got another 50 more minutes. That's 5-0. Kelly, thank you for staying on. If you want to interject, please do. Scott, do you have any of your followers that do want to call in, share their story? I just needed to really, capture that short time we had with Christina. So,
of course.
Yeah, I'm going to do a quick post and ask anybody that wants to call in now.
Yeah. Kelly, I am going over on Justice for Yeti, your Facebook page. I've gone on to your personal Facebook page. I see what you're doing. You're not giving up. Persistence is the key. Persistence is the key. And I love the fact that Christina said that your lawyer could consult with her. Very, very helpful.
Yes. Actually, I did not know that. So that's one of the things that I wanted to say is that, you know, when it comes to attorneys and stuff, attorneys they're great to have, you know, for the suit and tie and to kind of show you the legal path to take. But knowing your case, knowing what happened, and try to utilize the resources that you can available to you, like I said, I didn't know where I was going, and I had no idea what direction to go into, and I just so happened to be binging on YouTube, and I came across the spa, and that's where I saw Scott on there, and then I saw his link, and that's where I realized that there were more people like me that had gone through this experience, and not only is Scott's his group and his page, not only are they helpful for resources, but also too for support. I've made a lot of friends here. I have some friends that I've come very close with through this last 2 years that I've been going through this. And, we exchange information. We send cases to each other. We talk about different things. And this, you know, obviously it's off the group, but this is, you know, we have our personal phone numbers and stuff, and this is a great way to kind of connect everyone into, you know, one unit to kind of be, like you had said before, Darcy, about being, you know, there's strength in numbers here.
And I'm a big believer in that, Kelly. Strength in numbers. Knowledge is power. You are so right. And unfortunately, I was sharing with Scott this morning. We spoke briefly, but I sent out my third email wave this morning. And it goes out, as I mentioned, blind carbon copy. I got some that come back and say unsubscribe, and they're not really in the animal welfare industry. I get that. But when I see one that comes across my desk and they want to unsubscribe and they're in the animal welfare industry, they want to continue wearing those blinders. They want to continue wearing those rose-colored glasses. Then they do that. They are fools, in my opinion. And let me tell you what I do, and I advise this to Scott as well, is print out those that are wishing to unsubscribe. Because I have had transporters that should be aware of who these bad apples are in one facet or another within the animal welfare industry, whether it's a bad transporter, and there's plenty of bad transporters. We just had another case where they shoved these innocent dogs in the back of a U-Haul with no ventilation, and several of the dogs died from heat stroke, okay? Awful. We have bad rescues, and you combine the name of a rescue organization coupled with a 501c3 status, you've got the biggest scam going. And these people are not in it for the welfare of the animals. And this is what I often say. These individuals, whether it's a veterinarian, a rogue rescue, a rogue you name it, emotionally detached, completely removed, and totally desensitized. And if somebody blows a whistle on them, they'll do everything in their power to discredit you. They'll distract off the subject at hand. They'll derail off the subject at hand. They'll defame you every way they can. You have to fight back. You have to fight fire with fire. These people are bullies. And what I said to Christina when we did talk on a conference call last week with Scott, I said to her, I hope you're not offended, because I often say scum attracts scum and liars stick with liars. And people, when you try to tell them you're donating to a bad rescue, and here's the proof, as a private investigator, you go off of facts. You go off evidence. And if you provide the facts and the evidence and these people still refuse to take off the rose-colored glasses, then they deserve to get scammed. Okay? But we have to come together, power in numbers, as you said, Kelly, and fight these bad apples. And you do it the right way through the legal system is what I do. And I do have an excellent attorney. And I agree with you, Kelly. It took a while to get a great attorney. I have great attorneys in Florida, and I have a great attorney here in Georgia. And I might even hire another one in addition to this one, because they're fantastic. It does take money, but guess what? You know what? As my girlfriend who's visiting with me from Miami, money is just it's just paper, as she refers to it as. But listen, we are in tough times. You know, the economy is tough, and these people don't want to work. So they use the backs of these innocent animals to profit off of. Scott, I've gone on my bandwagon. It's your turn to talk.
Yeah. Kelly, it occurs to me that I just recently got an updated, well, I don't want to use the word updated because I'm not sure, a recent list from an animal law attorney that's very well known in the Pacific Northwest. And there are two referrals for Virginia on there. I don't know if you've spoken with these two people or not, but I just sent them to you on Messenger, so you may want to check them out. I mean, I've spoken to Heidi a few years ago, but I haven't had any contact with her since that I can recall. But you never know; they're both worth phone calls.
No, you're exactly right. We'll go to. Do whatever I need to do so that I can get justice for Yeti in this situation.
Yeah. I think the fact you have two opinion letters may be a big enough lure to one of them to take your case.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Definitely. I will definitely reach out to them today. I see your message now. I'll definitely reach out to them today. One of the things that I think everybody should really know, especially with what you're doing and everything, the main thing is to try, like Darcy was saying, and same thing with Christine, it just, you have to get your records. You have to stay calm. You have to not throw threatening language out, threaten them, because they can make it difficult for you. They can make it a lot more difficult.
I mean,
as long as you stay professional, then.
I mean, I've known a few people that have told me that, I had the initial intake with them, advised them about how to get the records. If they want to go in person, just keep it calm, be as unemotional as possible, considering the circumstances, and, get your records. And I've had people call me back, a couple weeks later or whatever. I know you told me to keep calm, but I couldn't keep calm, and they ended up being let out of there in bracelets. So it gets out of hand. It gets very emotional, and it just makes things worse. So most people, go ahead.
I have a thought.
I was just
going to
say that. Okay.
I have a thought. Why can't, and this is something that you might want to guide your followers, Scott, is they go into the office, have to remain calm, and go, hey, we're moving. yeah, we're moving, husband got transferred, whatever reason they give. I mean, it's a fib, but you know what? That might be the way to get the records. Because you're moving out of the area, you need your vet records for your dog because you're taking your dog with you to the next place. Is that a thought? I mean, what do you think?
That's a thought. And the problem, Darcy, is when people go in to get their records, and this doesn't happen very often. It did happen recently, and that's why I'm recalling it now. The lady went in and just asked for the records the dog had passed. And the front desk person said, I'm not allowed to give you these records because there's a big red markings on the front. Okay, so obviously, you know, this is a case where the veterinarian knows that there was negligence or malpractice, and they're going to do whatever they can to interfere with the, you know, providing records, which, of course, they have to do by law. We use 3 business days as a standard. And most of the time, there really isn't a problem. Some people I advise to send a certified letter demanding the records. And in most cases, the vets do reply when they get a certified letter because, you know, they know that the victim is starting to create a paper trail. And they know that it's inevitable that they have to provide them anyway. One lady the vet absolutely refused to provide the records. She filed a small claims case against the vet and dragged the vet into court. And the judge said, what do you want? I said, I want my records. He refuses to give me my records. So the judge ordered the vet to provide the records within 3 business days. Sometimes it gets a little crazy, but inevitably the records have to be provided. That's the law. And, you know, if they decide to falsify records, well, then, and that's the other thing Christina could speak to, any kind of fraudulent concealment, misrepresentation, falsifying documents, also called spoliation of evidence. In many states, you're entitled to what's called treble damages, basically 3 times whatever the economic damages are in the case. They'll triple that amount because of the fraud and everything. Now, having said that, we just had a case in North Carolina where absolute egregious malpractice, no question about it. The vet even decided to falsify records and inadvertently gave the victim both sets of records. So she went
That's
to her
what
attorney
happened
and said,
to me.
Look what they're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
In North Carolina, her attorney told her, fasten your seatbelts. In the state of North Carolina, if you're part of a learned profession, veterinarians, lawyers, doctors, whatever occupations fit into that, you're exempt from charges of fraud or deceptive practices. I said, you must be kidding me. She said, the attorney sent the statute. Well, they sent the statute to the victim. And, So I don't think that's the case in Christina's states. But there are apparently states where if you're part of a learned profession, you're exempt from, in other words, you can lie your you-know-what off all you want. But there's no peril.
Well, it's not against the law for veterinarians to enter information in at a later date. They don't recommend it, but it's not against the law. But when you, because the same thing happened to me. I received records the day after Yeti had passed. And then once I was trying to get an opinion letter through your group, she couldn't render an opinion until she had the full record. So I had called the vet's office, asked for the records again, and once, like you were just describing, I had a big red flag next to my name, and they told me that I needed to contact my attorney to call them for the records, and I am my own attorney. So instead of that, I just went down, I had them subpoenaed, and when I did, I received pretty much the same records, except there were notations made in the records after they had already seen my bill of particulars. So they've already seen my complaint and what I was complaining about, and they briefly put it into the second set of records, along with the fact that they took out all the dates as to when they were entered into the electronic monitoring system. So needless to say, they spoiled evidence. And I'll have to check with my state to find out if that applies, you know, here as well as like it does in North Carolina.
Yeah, hopefully you get a clear path to suing them for fraud as well. And it, you know, we do find that. I mean, we had a case. I think it's still going on. Might even be one of Christina's cases, where the last note in the medical records was at 5 p.m. The next note in the medical records was at 1 a.m. 8 hours later. Problem there is the dog passed away around 9:30. And there's absolutely no documentation, no.
Mm-hmm. Scott, did we lose you? Kelly, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. He might have.
We can no longer hear Scott.
Let's see. Yeah, it got dropped. He'll call back. He'll call back in. It's okay, Kelly. He'll call back in.
Do you have
anybody
waiting
in the
queue?
To show up on? No. I'll give out the number again. Area code 563-999-3599. That is the number to call in. Scotty, if you're listening, the number again, 563-999-3599. You know, maybe his phone went dead. Could be. Maybe, you know, he didn't charge his phone.
Yeah.
Anything's possible. Yep. Yep. Let's give it
another
second. But
okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one of the things that I want to tell other people that have been a victim to malpractice, even kennels, I mean, boarding, grooming, pet stores, any place that's been a victim of some sort of negligence by someone that is in charge of caring for animals, period. One of the things that I've found to be a big roadblock for me when I initially started this whole thing is the clerk of courts had asked me to call the legal aid to see if there could be an attorney there that could take my case as far as in this type of circumstance. See, Virginia besides the new Blue Pearl and Christine Anderson versus Blue Pearl here in Virginia, other than that, there really haven't been any cases in Virginia pertaining to vet mal. So I called the Virginia State Bar and tried to have a referral done, and she wouldn't even take my $30 because she couldn't find an attorney to help me with my case. So I'm hoping that obviously, as I go through this, I find out more and more, and I'm able to kind of formulate something and craft a complaint and be able to find an attorney once I have all of my ducks in a row as far as that goes. So it's very important that you know how you're going to present something to an opinion for an opinion letter, for a judge, for an attorney. That's very important.
And you are so right about that. And, you know, I have to tell you, I like this artificial intelligence. And there's one that I went on to called ChatGPT because I had to, utilize myself, pro se, as my own attorney until I found the wonderful man that I found on this particular lawsuit here in Georgia. But I will tell you, you type something in. It was amazing. I mean, you type in a question, and that's what I did. I had to go to that because I'm not a lawyer. I mean, I deal with lawyers. I consult with the lawyers on some cases, you know, here in Georgia. But for the most part, I don't know how to write a motion. So you have really taught yourself a lot. And, you know, you're young enough that maybe you should go to law school and become an animal advocate attorney.
That would be wonderful, but I don't envy attorneys' jobs at all. It is an exhausting experience. I would like to help others, kind of navigate their way through the system as far as just obviously based on my experience. What was that chat website you were just saying?
It's called ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. So G as in George, P as in Peter, T as in Tango. But you know what? Let me email you the right one, okay, because there's some ones that are copycats. I'm going to try and do this.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. Do you know how to make a conference call? Can you try and call Scott on his number and then patch him through, or do you want me to do it?
Sure, I can do that. Hold on just a second.
Okay. Wait, hold on. I got him. He came back.
Okay.
He's here. He's
okay.
here. Yeah, perfect timing. Hold on. Let me bring him on. Hey, Scott, you're back.
Have I been talking to myself for the last 5 minutes?
Yes. Yes, you have. So what do we miss?
Oh,
tell us.
Did you hear my Virginia story with Blue Pearl?
We were just talking about that.
Yeah, Kelly's aware. And then we had a case in did you hear the Tennessee case?
No.
No.
Mm-mm,
okay.
No.
We have a case going in Tennessee right now where the plaintiff lost his dog as a result of negligence, and the plaintiff asked for non-economic damages like pain and suffering, loss of companionship, and emotional distress. And the judge said, well, I can't award you that because the law doesn't allow for it. He said, but what I will award you is all the money that you spent on a mental health counselor as a result of the loss of your dog, if you haven't sought treatment for anything else prior to that. And the plaintiff said, no, because I lost my dog, I needed some therapy. And so the judge awarded that. Now that's a big deal. And so the point I'm trying to get to is things are changing. The courts are starting to, you know, open up their minds and their ears and starting to award damages where they would hesitate or just refuse to do so previously. And I have no reason to believe anything will change as far as that goes. And that's a great thing.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful.
Well,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, too, and most states consider animal companions as property, and obviously we're not trying to play Russian roulette with our cases or any type of stuff like that, but the main thing is holding veterinarians and other medical professionals more accountable, considering the more superior position that they stand in, holding them more accountable for their actions. And that's another reason you get opinion letters, because not all of them are negligent, like you said. You know, not all of them.
Right. Well, you know, the thing with that is that, as we all know, vet boards are corrupt and they tend to protect their own. We started advising our members to wait to file a vet board complaint and submit our opinion letter with your complaint. And it may be taking hold. I think it's a little too early, because we've had two Pennsylvania victims that did exactly that. They submitted their our vet letters with their vet board complaints, and they were contacted by the investigators to inquire more about the vet letters, and they were very interested in vet letters, and they said they wanted to see the outcome of their litigation, and then they would decide how to move forward against the vet. So it may make a difference. I don't have any solid proof that it will, but we have a case in Florida where the investigator there pretty much said the same thing. So I'm just starting to wonder if that's going to be something new and exciting we can look forward to, or if it's just an aberration and whatever the explanation was, you know, is what it is. But I'm very optimistic about some of the things I'm hearing in terms of changes in justice. I mean, as I'm sure you've seen in the group, I've posted this a few times over the years. You know, we stood outside. My friends, I had four friends and myself stood outside the vet's office with signs that said, "My dog died here," we cleared it with law enforcement, made sure we didn't need a permit and we were doing anything legal. And all they said was just don't block the sidewalk and that's fine. And you wouldn't believe how many cars pulled over. Some people got out of their cars and came up to us and said, what happened? And so between that and people just pulling up and rolling down their windows and asking, you know, we got the word out to a few hundred people that day. And, you know, that's one way to potentially impact the vet in terms of sending a message that your vet board is not here to protect you all the time. You know, you've created a lot of mayhem, a lot of chaos in the lives of many people, and don't expect to just walk away from it because we're not going to let you do it. And, of course, he also was a subject of a 6 o'clock news story as well. The local NBC2, the local affiliate in Fort Myers, was willing to put the story on their 6 o'clock news. So we were able to get the word out that way, too. So you did, like you guys are saying, you just need, you know, we need to bond and stick together and get the word out. You know, a few people here and there isn't going to make much of a difference, but everybody needs to, you know, push back and fight back. You know, but I'll also say, you know, Joe's Legacy is not a one-sided deal. I mean, I'll be the first to say, and I usually do say, that I'm here to tell you the vast majority of veterinarians are caring, compassionate. They do a great job. They provide competent care, and they entered the profession because of a profound love for companion animals. And, you know, we work with the other group, which is a minority, who seem to want to do things their own way, not willing to take responsibility for, you know, when they commit negligence or malpractice. And we do our best to seek justice in the best way we can.
What about that guy, somebody posted it on your page, in Florida, posing as a veterinarian. He was an actual dog groomer, posing as a veterinarian, and he killed a pregnant dog.
Yeah, I saw that. Horrible.
Wow.
You need to spend
people
some time
need to do
jail.
Their homework. Absolutely. When my one daughter got a dog, and I told you this, Scotty, a dash hound, I contacted a reputable rescue in the area where she lives, and I asked her, who do you use for a vet? And I'll tell you, I thank God for knowing good people out there in the, you know, animal advocacy world, in the animal rescue world, because I trust her. I've had her on the show, and she lined me up with a fantastic vet that my daughter just adores. And Little Bear is his name, the dash hound. She had gone away on a business trip and kept the dog at an older woman who is her pet sitter, and she loves her. But guess what she did? The older woman was giving too many treats to Bear, and he developed pancreatitis, an attack of pancreatitis. He came home, and within a couple hours, my daughter saw that he was, I think he was throwing up, so got him to the vet, and $800 later, but, you know, they got it. They took care of it. So, like, it was, like, too much fat in his system. He couldn't digest it, the little guy. So we really have to be together, bond together. We may have strong personalities. We may, you know, sort of, you know, bicker back and forth with each other. But those that are really in it for the animals, really want to fight, you need to really stand side by side and support one another. Because, as I mentioned, power in numbers, strength in numbers. If more people come forward, for example, and know that this particular rogue rescue, which is what I specialize in, and investigate and research them, and they discover that this particular rescue is not caring for the animals, they need to band together. Because is that rescue going to send out cease and desist to all these people that are speaking out? Are they all lying? Of course not. They're speaking the truth. And a lot of these, and I'll read something to you, because I was conversing with a true animal advocate who happens to be also an animal advocate attorney here in Georgia. So what she said to me was amazing on a text. She says, You need to relay there are genuine rescues who work their butts off to save animals, and then there are posers. I call them imposters. We've got another call coming through. These are individuals who have to feed their narcissism by being told how wonderful they are for doing the great job that they do, and on top of that, they have the audacity to gain profit off of homeless pets and do unspeakable things. They are not animal rescue. Isn't that well said? I love that.
Absolutely.
They are narcissists.
Absolutely.
Most of these rogue rescues, they are narcissists. They love the fact that people are, you know, blowing, you know, kudos to them in every direction. I do know who is on the queue. Let's bring her in. It's the wonderful Julia Sharp, who has been my co-host plenty of times. Julia is on the air with us now. Hey, Julia from Kentucky.
Hey, everybody. I only have a few minutes because I'm one of those reputable rescues, and I got three dogs coming this afternoon. So I've been listening to the show while I'm getting everything ready for them. You said something, Darcy, about people working together. I've been a rescuer for a very long time, well over 20 years. I was rescuing long before Facebook existed. And it's not about the people or the personalities. It has to be about the animals. There are people that I work with all the time that, God knows, I would never hang out with them. You know, our personalities are not the same, but they are good to the animals. What they are doing is good for those animals. So we work together, and it is about working together. And recently we've done some really good collaborations in our area. I know you've seen my Facebook where we had the food delivered for several rescues, and, you know, it is. It's a wonderful thing when good people can work together. But then there is that one segment, those users, those abusers, those malignant narcissists. Once again, I have been punched in the gut by somebody that I thought was out there for the animals, and turned out that she was taking our donations and not doing what she was supposed to with them. I'm talking about the ACO at Elliott County. And, you know, we threw our support behind her, darling.
Oh, my gosh. Elliott County in Kentucky? Tell me this again.
Yes.
Repeat.
Yes. Stop the Trixie Foundation, a.k.a. the Gulag Facebook page, and you will see my most recent punch in the gut. We threw our support behind this woman because she was going to be a great ACO. Animals are chained up, living in pens without shelter, without water, all right there in her front yard.
Wow.
I'm mortified.
Wow. When did you discover this?
Just
awful.
Like a week and a half ago. Just a week and a half ago. And, I mean, I'm devastated. You know, I really was hopeful for that county. You know, I wanted to see the people in that county have a functioning animal control. And I have residents of that county contacting me again and telling me it's little Trixie. And, you know, oh, my God, there are animals out there. You can hear them crying. It's terrible. You know, it's just... It's never ending, Darcy.
Well,
and I'm sad.
You know what I would do? You need to expose her. Let's get it on the Stop the Trixie Foundation, a.k.a. the Gulag. Kelly, you're listening. Please jump on Facebook. You're young. You're a multitasker. Like that page, please. And also, we can get it on Inspector Bark, The Bad and Ugly in the World of Pets, Guard Dog USA, all these platforms. We need to expose this woman. She needs to be fired.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do, because, you know, the people on my page chipped in. I was helping her with her Amazon wish list. People donated thousands and thousands of dollars of supplies. And those things wound up in a trash heap in her yard. I mean, it's deplorable. The pictures and the video are on the Stop the Trixie page. You know me, I'm a whistleblower. I don't sit there. I am so tired of people standing up for the neglectors and not the neglected.
Well said. Well said.
You know, that's,
well
that's
said. Is this the same ACO that went and got the pig off Randy Stagg?
Yes.
That?
Yes.
Wow.
And, you know, Randy Stagg should have been charged for that, and he wasn't. And that was because of the judge executive and the ACO.
Well,
I'm
needs
so
to be
angry,
blasted,
Dorothy.
Okay? I know you are. I'm sorry you didn't inform me of this earlier. I am so sorry. I didn't glance all the way down on Stop the Trixie Foundation Facebook page, dash, a.k.a. the Gulag, about the diversion with Randy Skaggs. Can you talk about that real quick?
Yes, Randy Skaggs has violated his diversion several times. So we have a letter-writing campaign going right now, and there are some sample letters on the page, links to a Google Drive. Randy Skaggs transported raccoons between rabies vector counties, rabies vector animals between counties, which is illegal without a license in Kentucky. Nothing was done. He syringe-fed baby birds and aspirated them and killed them. That is tampering with wildlife in Kentucky without a license. Nothing was done. He hurt the pig. Nothing was done. He recently posted a picture of a bull mounting a pig like it was funny, and I have no doubt the pig was injured. He went to Ohio and drug some kittens from Ohio back to his hellhole without the benefit of vaccines, a vet visit, or anything, and he has turned those intact kittens loose in his feral colony. It never ends in that county. The person that was supposed to be enforcing that diversion has done nothing. So,
can you explain what a diversion is? What's a diversion?
Diversion is a plea deal. Diversion in Kentucky is guilty light. That is where you stand before the judge and you say, yes, I committed these crimes I'm accused of, but I promise you I won't do them again if you give me a chance. So they gave him a chance, and he's right back to doing all the same things he's done before. He is operating on a day-to-day basis, buying food for the animals every 2 days. I'm a small rescue. I keep months of supplies on hand. You know, you don't fool around with your animals. And that's all he's doing. He's making money off their backs.
Well, let me ask you, and I don't want to mention the name that I gave you a few weeks ago. Don't mention the title of the organization. And I want to talk to you more behind the scenes. Did you try and reach that individual name that I gave you a couple weeks ago?
I did, and I left a message. I have not gotten a call back yet, or I should say I've not gotten a call back yet that I know of, because I have been running absolutely ragged ever since we had the big doodle bust. Like I said, it just never ends. They had to remove 24 doodles from a woman's property. And it really put our shelter in a bad position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a never-ending deal.
It's exhausting. It's mentally draining. And these animals, I mean, I'm reading something here. Shelter after shelter throughout the United States closed an intake. You know, they're preparing for that, you know, save them all mentality by the time 2024 rolls around. Or did I say, is it 2025? It's 2025. It's a mantra that Best Friends of Utah is putting out there with all the millions that they have. Why are we not
stopping
the problem?
They have failed. They have failed.
The
animals. I am going on the record. Yes, I'm going on the record stating that Best Friends, HSUS, and the ASPCA have all failed the animals. So has No Kill America. The whole No Kill movement has failed our animals. Spay and neuter. It's the only thing that's going to help. What isn't born
can't suffer. It's common sense. Come on. It's
logic.
That's
it. And we're going to have to stop slapping a Band-Aid on this situation, and we're going to have to get out there and just start spaying and neutering everything we can get our hands on.
Well, I shared with you a few years ago, I did a podcast on a county here in Georgia. I think it's Paulding County, P as in Peter. There's a Spaulding and a Paulding, go figure. There's 167 counties here in the state of Georgia. And they did a spay and neuter law. They called it no roaming law. And, you know, nobody wants to be told what to do, mandate. You know, nobody likes to be mandated. But I'll tell you something. This is the problem. And these cult followers of this best friends, and, you know, you and I have to talk about another issue, Julia. I've been wanting to call you, but we've got some work cut out for us, my friend, and we'll leave it at that. But I will let you go. It's 10 to 2. I'm going to let Scott wrap this
yes,
up with
I've
Kelly.
Got,
but
yeah.
Thank you for always listening and being the voice for the voiceless.
Oh, always, always. Thank you, my friend, and we will talk very soon.
Yes, I will call you probably on Friday, okay? Okay, take care.
Okay.
Thanks
okay.
for calling.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. So, Scotty, we have 9 minutes left. 2 hours flies by for me. I don't know if it flew by for you, but it always does. 2 hours, and truly, I can do this on a daily basis. I just don't have the, you know, the time to create all these episodes. It's me, myself, and I. Ricky and Lucy,
right.
My dogs, are my co-producers, but they sleep most of the time. So, and, you know, like you, you do this on your own time and dime. Let's talk about that. I do this on my own time and dime. I want to help people that want to help these innocent animals. And if anybody is interested in giving something toward the cause, please reach out to me, my Inspector Bark Facebook page, send me a private message. We need financial backers. We really do, to fight these imposters within the animal welfare industry. And what my goal is to have one bucket, the first bucket of monies that when I do my research and I check somebody out and their story equals the fact that this particular rescue is not doing right by the animals, using the funds for their own selfish personal gain, or if it's a veterinarian, we can fund them the money to pursue legal action and protect them. Because a lot of people don't have the financial means to retain an attorney. It can be very expensive. But what these rogue rescues are doing is, because they are not regulated, they can use money as they see fit until you blow the whistle on them. It's called misappropriation of funds. And I'll tell you something, the state, local, federal levels, and the good old IRS, federal level, IRS needs to stop giving every Tom, Dick, and Harry a 501c3 status, because what we're seeing coming on the scene are thugs. They are thugs. They have criminal backgrounds. They have judgments. They have liens. This is who you want to give your money to? Come on. So, yes, we need to band together, and we do need financial help. That would be wonderful.
You know, we've got members in, I think by now, all 50 states, or at least almost all 50 states. All it takes is a couple of phone calls to get started, and you're not going to find the right person after the first or second phone call. You're going to get kicked around, maybe kicked up the ladder. But I was able to get to a lobbyist in Florida a while back, and I had spoken with her about some of my concerns about the veterinary profession, some of the things that go on that we would like to see changed. And she said, you know, what you're asking for is not that unreasonable. You know, I think I can help you with a lot of that. I said, well, you know, next question, cost. What do you think it would cost? She said, I'm going to ballpark it at around $10,000 for expenses and, travel and what have you. I said, well, you know, that's really not that bad. Let me go to my group and see if we can raise $10,000, because I know that would really, really excite a lot of people in my group if we could get some of these changes made. You know, we wanted one of the things we wanted was to mandate that any veterinarian whose license was suspended for any reason, they'll have to reveal that in the, you know, in their place of employment. It has to be prominently displayed in their place of employment that they, you know, well, what are they doing there if their license is suspended? But you'd be surprised that even though that happens, they continue to practice, and unless someone calls them out, they keep going. Anyway, the group's response was lukewarm at best. I think we were able to raise $400 or $500. At that point, I think we had over 2,000 people. So $5 a person would have gotten the job done. The point being that, yes, we have to all band together if we're serious about helping animals. You know, you can't have the attitude, let the other guy do it. And if you don't want to spend the time and, you know, work toward resolving some of these issues, you know, a $5 donation, you know, we even started asking for a $5 donation every 3 months. And the response has been minimal. So they're, you know, people will, you know, they call out who they want to call out, but it's just for them. A lot of people are not willing to try to help in other areas, and that's what we need. In the space you work in the space I work in any area that has anything to do with companion animals, we all need to step up, put a little effort forth, and not use the excuse that we're busy. We're busy, busy, busy. You know, you're going to find time. If you want to do something, you're going to find time to do it. If it's not helping defenseless animals, so be it. But,
right,
you know, so there's lots of excuses, lots of reasons not to do anything, and we just have to try to work on, you know, change. It's all it's about. You know, like I said earlier, that we've noticed a number of court rulings that we would never have guessed would ever happen a few years ago, and now we're starting to see them take hold. And, you know, we expect to see more and more progress as we continue to bring these cases into court and judges start to see that, well, animals may be classified as personal property, they're still family members. They're living creatures like human beings, and they deserve all the warmth and love that human beings get. And they need to be treated with dignity and respect like human beings are. And I think we're going to get there.
Well,
it may take more years, but we'll get
right
there.
You're right. Three more minutes. What I want to say is what Julia Sharp said. You know, she's sick and tired of money being given to those that are neglecting these animals versus the neglected. And it's so true with this Randy Skaggs in Kentucky. This guy is, he gets a thrill out of seeing animals suffer. I mean, he's sick. I mean, he really is a sick man. And I think the locals just don't want to deal with him, so they turn a blind eye and a deaf ear. But this is terrible. And now the animal control officer? Oh, yeah, I'm going to speak to Julia and talk about, you know, what we can do to that. That woman needs to be fired. Kentucky is one of the worst states when it comes to helping the animals. They just finally, well, years ago, maybe 3 years ago, four at the most, said bestiality is, you know, illegal now. They allowed that. There are some states that allow bestiality. That is sick. We have a lot of evil people. We have a lot of evil people. I just got the 90 seconds. So, Scott, you go ahead and wrap it up. And I'm going to say, first and foremost, Kelly, thank you so much for coming on. But you got about 80 seconds, Scotty. So wrap it up, and thank you for holding down the show today. It was great. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the platform, Darcy, as always. I'm always happy to be here trying to spread the message of Joey's legacy and what we do. For more information, people can go to joeyslegacy.org, and there's lots of good information there. You'll see some of our opinion letters from our veterinarians, redacted, of course, to protect privacy. There's lots of good information there. The Facebook page, for those that are on Facebook, Joey's Legacy Vet Mal Victims, got over 4,300 members now and growing. And all I can say is I'm very appreciative to you, Darcy, for the opportunity.
Well, we work well together, and I want to help you any way I can. Anyone that helps the animals and a voice for the animals, I'm right with you. So, Scott, it's a pleasure, and we'll continue doing this. So with that note, guys, I think we've got about less than 30 seconds. A big shout out to Christina Bergstrand, a wonderful attorney. Now I got 10 seconds. And Kelly for calling in. Julia, thank you again. Lynn Gerber, everybody. Check the Inspector Bark Facebook page. Give it a like, and we'll talk about our next show. All right, everybody, thank you so much. We are good to go. Scott, thank you. Bye, Kelly. Bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.